For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
Hey, everybody. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Welcome to Beekeeping for Newbies. Thank you so very much for taking the time to listen. I do appreciate you. And as always, feel free to reach out, Jeff, at beekeepingfornewbies.com. That's N-E-W-B-E-E-S.com. Well, I would say happy Valentine's Day, and I would ask you to be my Valentine, but since my audience is about 70% male, it appears, I don't want to roll the dice on that one. So I hope you guys have a great day and do whatever it is you do with your boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, sister, well, probably not your sister, I guess. But anyway, have a great day. Go have dinner together. Have a nice evening. Something special. Talk about honeybees. Well, this week we have an interesting topic, so I wanted to get into this much earlier than I did. And I want to send a special thank you to Christy down in Houston. She first brought this to my attention. I really wasn't following things as closely. I think I ended up doing like the bee buzz the same day a lot of this started coming out, and it was like the next day where she's like, hey, by the way, have you heard about this? And I started, paying attention and reading and doing some research. And as the days went by, I kept hearing more and more, and I thought, well, maybe I'll hold off another day and see if there's more info. Well, let me hold off another day. And I think I'm kind of at a point where I've actually done no research today, but I've kind of capped out, I think, the maximum amount of information that I can get for you on the subject without delaying getting the information out anymore. So I found a bit of a balance. I would have liked to have had this done a little bit sooner though. The subject of the episode here is, of course, the 2024-2025 honeybee crisis. What's really happening? So obviously we have a big deal going on here in the beekeeping world. If you haven't been tracking it or paying attention, beekeepers across the U.S. are opening their hives. They're finding massive colony losses. Some are reporting 50% or more. I mean, we're talking like hundreds of million. I think the original number I saw was in the 145 to 150 million range of losses as of about a week ago. And people are going to continue to report more and more. But today we're going to dive in a little bit more. And I want to kind of make sure that I give you all the information I can as to what's going on, what we know so far, and what this is ultimately going to mean for you, particularly as the new beekeeper and somebody who's maybe in year one or two, right? Because we're talking primarily at this point, commercial entities. Now, it doesn't mean that it won't affect you as a hobbyist. It just means that there's kind of a different way of doing things. There's a different relationship. So like you're going to go out, you're going to do your inspection. You're going to name the bees. Oh, this is Veronica, my queen. Like it's a different level of relationship that you have with your bees that the commercial folks do. And my hope is that by the time you've listened to a whole lot of episodes, maybe even taken, one of our courses, that you're at a point where you don't even care. I mean, you care from the sense of wanting to know and be cognizant of things, but you don't really care about what's going on in the outside world because you know you're doing everything right. And you know that you've treated, you've monitored, your bees are healthy. And as I've said many times before, sometimes even when you're doing everything right, you still are wrong and you don't win. I want to start this off by reading a message that came out, and I believe this came from, or at least a good portion of it came from Project Apis M. So if you're not familiar with them, it's just, www.projectapism.org. They have a lot of information, and we're going to talk about them again in a minute. But there's a lot of good info there with that organization. But I believe this was the source for this article, February 6th, 2025. Severe and sudden losses of managed honeybees across the nation as commercial beekeepers in the USA inspect their bees after winter to transport over 90% of the nation's managed honeybees to pollinate California almonds, they are discovering alarming colony losses. These losses are severe, broad, and may impact food security through inadequate pollination services. Survey results are still accumulating, but information gathered from 234 beekeepers found an average recent losses well over 50%, with a combined financial loss over $139 million, Combined with losses during other times of year, this additional loss puts many beekeepers at a loss rate of 70 to 100% over the past 12 months. The symptoms of loss are reminiscent of colony collapse disorder conditions which occurred in 2007-2008 when bees suddenly disappeared from their colonies. During recent inspections by field scientists, deceased colonies often died with ample honey stores, leaving small patches of brood, with most or all the adult bees missing. Another symptom has been the rapid dwindling of surviving colonies, often within 10 days of passing health inspections. Now, I'm going to take a quick pause here, and I want to go back and just talk about a couple of things in the article, and then we'll do a couple paragraphs, and then we'll do some brief analysis here. Now, if you talk about the very beginning of this here, where it says that the number of losses and the percentages, and it says that 90% of the nation's managed honeybees go to California for almond pollination, and it mentions food security. It's one thing to say, and I think I brought this up the other day, that if honeybees aren't in an area and then you bring them in, it, of course, will displace other pollinators. And then the research to that study had found that once those bees go away or if they're moved out of that area and they don't return, regular native pollinators will return to those areas and, reestablish things over time. Well, when you look at this, you think, oh my gosh, that's terrible. But then you think, oh, but well, that's okay because native pollinators can return. The problem is the vast number. I mean, we are talking realistically, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of colonies of bees that are going out to do this work. You don't replace that overnight because this is not like a natural ecosystem. It's not where you have a piece of national forest land that was just left untouched and whatever grew, grew, and whatever lives and thrives in that area just lives and thrives in that area. You've specifically said the climate and conditions are right here, so we're going to load this area up with almond trees. Therefore, you know that the environment doesn't natively, naturally support honeybees, so you have to bring them in, bring them out. So the reason they specifically reference a threat to food security is because those things, there just is not adequate native pollination that is taking place. And there, you can't manufacture that. You can't just make that environment over time be able to support that much pollination. So that's a huge challenge. Now, talking about colony collapse disorder, I just want to reiterate, and I know that sometimes some of these concepts and these things we discuss are a bit repetitive, but I think a lot of it is, one, it's really important for people who are new and haven't listened to a lot of previous episodes. But two, it's really important to reinforce important concepts and ideas. And we often talk about how a honeybee has this innate intelligence that's hardwired and built into its DNA and its genetics to basically say, wow, I'm sick. I don't feel good. Instead of laying down in a cell and taking a nap and then going back to work the next day or something like that, the honeybee says, something's wrong with me, I don't know what it is, bye ladies, I'm out of here. And they walk out the front door, fly away, and never come back. And that is their drive to protect the colony for the greater good of the colony so that others may live, which is a quote from something else, by the way. But anyway, so when you hear colony collapse disorder, a lot of times people don't exactly know what it is because it's not like a disease or a virus or a single item or entity or thing. It is basically a catch-all phrase for anything that may cause bees to essentially individually abscond from a hive for the well-being and the greater good of the colony. Now, another thing I found to be really fascinating, but it's important to just touch on briefly here, it says another symptom has been the rapid dwindling of surviving colonies, often within 10 days of passing health inspections. Now, when an inspector shows up and they're looking at the hive, they're generally looking for, what is inside the hive? Are there visible signs, symptoms of brood-related illness? Is the queen present? Does everything look healthy? Is there a normal brood pattern? Do I see, an unusual amount of pests or things that are out of control, right? Having a couple hive beetles in a hive is going to happen. Having them out of control, that's a different story, right? So they're going to look at all those things. But in general, for an inspection, particularly on a larger scale, they're not going through and taking samples of 1,000 colonies. They're taking a sample set of a group of colonies. Okay, we'll look at this one, and that one. And then for the most part, they say, okay, well, as long as everything else is like what you're doing here, we'll sign off. But you can't just look at a honeybee. Now, there are things that are very obvious when you look at, like, deformed wing virus, when it is actually manifesting itself in, with deformed wings or potentially even absent wings. Those are a bit more obvious to see. But others don't have the overt obvious symptoms that you would like to have for an illness, so that you can just look at them and be, oh, okay, this is the problem that they have. This is the disease or the illness that they have. And because of that, you have to do testing. So if there isn't a virus or something that is affecting and impacting them, I'm not overly surprised that they can pass a health inspection and then die, you know, within 10, 12 days. Because remember, and this is something we go back to when we talk about our varroa treatments and our management, if you're not treating aggressively and early in the spring, you can say, well, I'll just start treating in August, September before the fall. You can be sitting there in August, September with your mite counts can be 0 to 1, and your bees die a month later because the viral loads were through the roof. And even though there's no more mites left, they're sick. They're infected. Okay, let's go back into the article here. Similar severe losses were seen 2 years ago when beekeepers in Florida lost up to 90% of their colonies, incurring $4.28 million in lost revenue. At that time, these beekeepers worked alongside the USDA ARS Bee Research Laboratory in Beltsville, Maryland, to sample and identify parasites, pathogens, and pesticides involved in the crashes. Chemical exposures were also analyzed, recently presented, and are awaiting publication. The effort to sample, analyze pathogens, and calculate economic impacts are well documented here. They have a link, which I will also include in the description on the YouTube syndication, as well as within the podcast episode itself. In January 2025, beekeepers again discovered sudden losses. In response, surveys were shared to determine the extent of the problem, and samples were collected. This effort garnered the participation of many beekeepers and mobilized a multi-organization working group. Gathering Information, a collaborative effort between Project APIS-M, American Beekeeping Federation, American Honey Producers Association, Apiculture Extension Programs, and beekeepers such as Brett Addy, allowed for the rapid collection of real-time information to determine if these losses were regional or widespread. Surveys and interviews quickly determined these losses are nationwide and severe. The cause has not yet been identified. However, the usual causes of loss, including winter management and high levels of parasitic mites, are not currently indicated as causes of these losses. Okay, so let's pause right here. Everything that I said a few minutes ago, right, that's basically what this last sentence is telling us, is that that's kind of out the window. And this is always my go-to. When someone says, I lost bees, they're gone, and they left with plenty of food, and they're just dead. There's no adult bees left. It's all over. I generally, 95% of my mental energy is like varroa related virus or some other kind of infection. That's always where my brain goes to by default. And they're saying like, hey, we've ruled that out. Like, we don't think that is the case. That to me is what becomes a little bit scary. Let's continue on. Gathering samples. The Bee Research Laboratory, USDA ARS, Beltsville, Maryland, collected samples from commercial operations, surviving colonies, and from remnants of dead colonies. Priority was placed on collecting material that could identify the cause of such severe losses. A wide screening for pathogens and pesticides was conducted in California. Beekeepers provided access to colonies and detailed management history of their operations. Field scientists at the USDA ARS collected dying bees, sampled dwindled colonies, wax, and stored pollen from surviving and dead colonies. Thanks to this swift collaborative effort, a comprehensive analysis of pathogen, parasite, and chemical residues will be performed. In addition to the disease and the pesticide analysis from Beltsville, laboratories in Tucson, Baton Rouge, Davis, Stoneville, and Logan will apply their expertise analyzing field data, weather patterns, and chemical risks as factors in these severe losses. Samples will be analyzed for known virus levels in dying and surviving bees, parasitic varroa mite genes for resistance to amitraz treatment with assistance from the USDA Baton Rouge lab, pesticide residues in adult bees, wax, and pollen, and genetic screening for novel viruses and metagenomic analysis of microbial community composition. So the next steps. Samples are being analyzed and additional information will be shared as it becomes available through social media and updates from the organizations listed below, including... This first one I think is really important here. As soon as I have the information, I will be sure to put it out to you. There is a free webinar that will be offered by scientists who collected and analyzed these samples in early March. This is going to be through the organization Project APIS N that I mentioned earlier. And again, their website, www.projectapis, APIS, the letter M as in Mike, .org. Beekeepers involved will receive updates directly, findings that will directly impact beekeeper management, such as Ametraz resistance and Varroa samples and clear pathogen signals, will be shared broadly and promptly through public announcements and beekeeping organizations. Pesticide residue analysis and RNA sequencing will be shared through peer-reviewed publications. Beekeepers are encouraged to share their information in the survey before February 10th. There is a link. So if you have any information that you want to share, again, this link will also be posted in the notes of the podcast as well as within the description on the, again, the YouTube syndicate. Beekeepers experiencing losses are encouraged to submit their ELAP claims immediately. So I can give you that link as well. I'm going to give you a little history, story, whatever on ELAP. ELAP is the Emergency Assistance for Livestock and Pollinators, USDA program. I encourage you, you know, if you're managing a decent number of hives, link up with your local FSA, your local office for, I think it's a field service agency, I think is what they call it, your local USDA office. Talk to them ahead of time, because I'm so bad about this. Like, I talk to them, I have dialogue with them, I know who they are, I know where they are. I don't submit my stuff every year. I keep my own records. I saw a lot of handwritten notes, then the handwritten notes get digitized. So if you ever intend to try and leverage that resource that is available through USDA, talk to your local office, make sure you file. I think you have like until the first, like, I don't know, it's like the first business day in January or something like that to file for the previous year. So you're going to need to give them, here's how many hives I started the year with, here's how many I ended with, here's, you know, your colony information, here's all my records. You want to make sure you're doing everything you can to make them happy so that if you have a problem, like a hurricane, tornado, flood, or anything else that could impact your bees, then, you know, they can help you out.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on Too Tired to Cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on Too Tired to Cook takeout every week. Get one line on Unlimited Welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on Unlimited Welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
So that's about it, other than some closing notes that are inside this document. And what I'll do is I'll PDF this and I will put it, I think I might just put it under the In the News section. I won't label it as an In the News episode, but I'll give it a specific identifier that'll make it easier for you to take a look and read this again later on if you'd like. So I want to read something from another article, because as we discuss some of the things that are different, like today, it appears as though, relatively definitively at least, that Varroa is involved, because whether it's the mite developing a resistance to Ametraz or some other type of treatment, or is it an issue with a parasite that the mite is carrying that has possibly mutated? So maybe this is a newer virus or a newer strain of a virus. You know, we believe that, again, it's tied to Varroa, but not 100% certain exactly how or in what way. But I do want to read a couple things to you from another article, which I will definitely cite that in the notes as well. The commercial beekeeping operations in this study reached out for help due to both severe economic harm and severe loss and morbidity of their managed hives. Symptoms and losses were reflective of national losses experienced 2007 through 2009. Information garnered through beekeeper interviews directed the field collection techniques. They go on a little bit further here. Let me go down to what I wanted to get to. We did not find a significant difference in viral loads or mite levels between colonies of different strengths. This may be because Varroa and viral infections can be asymptomatic or symptomatic in honeybee colonies. So that was one key thing to kind of focus in on, is that just because they look great doesn't mean they're not already sick or infected. Now, a couple paragraphs down here. The cause of these bee losses are still unknown. The symptoms are iconic of colonies which collapse due to heavy infestations of Varroa destructor. Beekeepers largely begin treating their colonies in October and November. If their initial treatments were not effective and mite levels remained high, then significant damage could have been imparted on their worker bee populations before the mite levels were corrected. Beekeepers have been reporting ineffectiveness of a widely used miticide, Amitraz, and there is evidence of genetic resistance developing in mite populations. Further studies into mite resistance to Amitraz are imperative as commercial beekeeping is reliant upon the miticide. Okay, so that was another important point that I wanted to make with regard to the mites and treatment. And then there's another piece of this article that I found was really fascinating that I wanted to read about mite washes and their effectiveness. So we can talk all day long about how you should do mite washes and how you should do them and when you should do them and all these other things. But if you are just treating, right, let's say that you go out and you're like, I'm just going to treat. I'm never going to check them. I don't care. I know my treatment's going to be effective because I'm so awesome. I appreciate that. I think you're awesome too. But the reality is you may be using something that the bees are resistant to and have no idea. A lot of times what happens for me is I end up having to become a detective. Someone's like, oh, I lost all my bees. And I'm like, well, what happened? And they're like, no, I have no idea. And I'm like, well, did you treat for Varroa? And they're like, yeah, we absolutely treated. And I'm like, okay, well, cool. Let me think about what else could be going on. Oh, by the way, how many times did you treat? No, well, we treated once in November of last year. And I'm like, yeah, well, it's August. And they're like, well, yeah. So that's the whole thing. Like, how many times are you treating? And just as important, are you assessing the effectiveness of that treatment? Because if you're not doing it, I'm not a personal fan of the sugar shake, because a lot of people think that if you do the sugar shake, that means that, you know, you're not going to kill the bees. Now, think about that, though. You have sugar in this thing and you're just like rattling the crap out of them. And I jokingly say that you'll end up with shaken bee syndrome, but I'm sure that it's a decent technique as far as the actual sugar, you know, raking across the bodies of the bees and dislodging the mites. I'm sure that part works. But alcohol or dish soap, I mean, both of those are pretty effective. Just, you know, like a, I don't know, like a tablespoon of dish soap, tablespoon and a half in a gallon, and you can use that. Pretty cost effective versus using alcohol. So if you're doing a lot of them, that might be a way to go as well. But if you aren't doing mite washes and you're not doing them correctly, that's a really big deal, because I'm going to read this to you right here, and this is really important. The alcohol wash was not deemed a universally reliable method to report what Varroa infestations might have recently been, since beekeepers had used repeated treating cycles. For example, two operations reported treating up to 2 weeks prior to our sampling. Those colonies reported very low levels of Varroa, even though clinical signs of high mite loads were visible in the sampled colonies. Consequently, other methods to detect Varroa were implemented. Namely, worker bees were inspected at emergence for Varroa. Some colonies had a high level of infestation in their worker brood. So anyway, that research study continues on a bit further. And like I said, I'll put links to this data. I'm actually going to put a couple of the PDFs in the downloads section of the Beekeeping for Newbies site. So just go to the homepage. You'll see in the upper right where it says downloads. And you can download these two documents. I'll have them labeled up there. I may even just link them directly out of the in the news section, something like that. But let's just do a quick recap here. So if you're seeing adult bees disappearing, the colony is left with honey, maybe a little bit of brood, no workers. There's no obvious sign. Like, for example, if you put your bees somewhere where they're pollinating apples and the farmer next door decides to spray a bunch of pesticides, you know, 3 days later, that might be your source, right? That's a very obvious situation that you can pinpoint as being a pesticide-related item. But if you are not able to determine or see or have any evidence of something else taking place, you know, this could very well be, you know, you experiencing the same thing. So what I would tell anybody, you know, continue to monitor aggressively, do your monthly washes, rotate your treatments. You know, we know Amitraz resistance is being reported more. It's being investigated. It might be a good time to look into oxalic acid or some other treatment method. And definitely don't skip the treatments. Even if things look great through the spring and the summer, don't just say, well, you know, numbers look good in August, let's just skip that October, November treatment. My recommendation is still to go ahead and prophylactically go ahead and treat anyway. Definitely watch for those early warning signs, like the dwindling colony size that we talked about, particularly if there is a flow and there is
abundant resources available, you are queen right, meaning that you have a queen in that colony. And instead of building up, they're shrinking in size. Like, that's a big red flag. Foragers just disappearing, you know, while they're still, you know, active brood there, and there's nobody out foraging. And then, of course, obviously, like we mentioned before, with, you know, finding a hive full of honey and there's no bees there, that's obviously pretty characteristic of what's going on here. So the final closing comments here. I know that this can sound a little bit scary and dismal, especially if you're, you know, a new beekeeper. You're looking at year number one, two, three, or, you know, there's so much. We're surrounded by so much information these days that sometimes when it hits, then you end up getting inundated with it. And this is a great example of that. I had one person mention it. And I'm like, oh, let me go do some research. Like, everything I look at now, that's all they're talking about. And it's like a lot of the regular news cycle. It can bring you down and depress you and be like, oh my God, it's the end of the bee world. I'm pretty sure it's going to be okay. I'm like, we're going to figure out what's going on. We're going to make some adaptations. And the good news is honeybees are survivors. They have adapted through centuries of environmental changes, people changes, chemical changes, bug changes. They're very good at survival. Many of the challenges in beekeeping have been presented by modern, you know, Western society and by all of the things we do as people. Like, if we all just left, if all the people left the world would probably function really, really well by itself. But I'm not suggesting that, you know, anything weird there. But anyway, try not to let it get you down. Don't overthink it. Stay focused on the fundamentals. Keep doing all of the things that we talk about here on the podcast, things that we teach in the course, things that we have kind of laid out as the roadmap. Just stay on course and it'll work itself out. We may have to make some, you know, again, make some changes, adapt a little bit, but that's what beekeeping is. But remember that whatever happens, we as the beekeepers have to accept responsibility. They're our hives, they're our bees. We have an obligation to do the very best by them. So when you're thinking of your Varroa strategy this year, and if your strategy includes anything like, I'm not going to treat because I want to be natural, I'd like you to think about the thousands of colonies out there that are under active management, and even they didn't make it. People who are actively engaged in beekeeping for a living every day, interacting with all these hives, and they're still losing bees. So doing nothing is really not an option. Now, the one option that I have extended for years, nobody ever takes me up on this one, maybe someday, but if you're like, you know what, I don't want to throw away $1,000 or $1,200 buying a hive, buying all this protective gear, you know, getting all this stuff ready in my house, doing these inspections when it's stinking hot, $200 just to buy a nuke. What you can do is you can just give that money to me and then I will buy a hive and I will maintain it the way that it's supposed to. In fact, I'll put your name on the hive so I can like go by with the camera and I'd be like, oh, this is Bob's hive and they're doing really well. No problem with that. If you want to throw your money away, give it to me. But anyway, I say as a joke, like 20 people are going to do that now. Then I'm going to have to maintain. So I'm like, there's Bob, there's Kim, and there's Rachel. All right, I got to move on before I start rambling and get this place out of control. The next episode that we're going to talk about here real quick is the beekeeping triangle. This is the balance between money, honey, and overwintering. You're not going to want to miss that. That'll be episode 132. I really want to get that out by the end of the weekend. I'm just so much going on. All right, everybody. Hugs and kisses. Be my Valentine. Be kind to one another. Remember that I love you and there's nothing you can do about it. We'll talk to you soon.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.